Okay, so you're all wondering, why on earth did I pick this text? It's a very strange sounding text. But it's an important text. It's a text in which Isaiah is called to the work of being a prophet. There's lots of ways that we could take this text. We could interpret it as being literal, so that Isaiah was literally carried up into the presence of God and experienced exactly this, and when we get there, we'll experience the same thing. We could interpret this as Isaiah trying to write down an ecstatic vision that he had. Or we could take it as Isaiah creatively writing this story to capture a larger truth. However you want to interpret it, it's that larger truth that we're after. One of the things that we can say about this text is the same thing that Dorothy said to Toto, we're not in Kansas anymore. It's a wholly other place where God is found. This is not the experience of finding God in a beautiful sunset or in the laughter of an infant. This is finding God in a place that's utterly different than the world that we know. And because it is so very different, Isaiah realizes that his life has been spent doing things, saying things, seeking things that really don't matter. In fact, are opposed to the holiness that he experiences in this setting. And so he cries out. He feels as if he's in danger, as if his inability to follow the will of God in his life now puts him in mortal danger when he's actually in the presence of God. He cries out. He says, I am a person of unclean lips from a people of unclean lips. And you can interpret that however you want. The way I interpret it is that what he says, what he thinks, what he does has not been in line with the way God would have him live. And so he feels an alien in the presence of the holy. But there's a fix for that. In this strange setting, in the throne room of God, there are all these little critters flying around with six wings, and one of those critters grabs a pair of tongs and goes to a brazier and picks out a red-hot coal and sticks it on Isaiah's lips. It's an image of searing pain. But there's no mention of pain in the story. Maybe that's implied by the imagery itself. I remember one time I went camping with my grandfather and I cut my leg really badly, and he was saying maybe we should cut the camping trip short and go back, and I said no, I wanted to stay, and he said, well, okay, but you're going to have to put some iodine on that. And so I did, and I didn't want to make it seem too dramatic because I didn't want my grandfather to cancel the trip, so I didn't cry out, but iodine on a cut is really painful, and so I whistled. Put a little iodine, and then I'd whistle for a while, and then I put a little bit more iodine, and then I'd whistle for a while. And this went on for a long time, because it was a pretty good-sized cut. My grandfather found it very amusing, but he also said that the pain was how I knew that the iodine was working. Maybe Isaiah had that in mind when he came up with this imagery of the coals on the lips, the notion that it is painful to turn away from the world that has been so much a part of how we understand ourselves. It is painful to make that transition into the world of God's values. There we are sacrificing something, though it may not be good for us. We are still accustomed to that life, and it can be painful to give it up. In any case, after the coal touches Isaiah's lips, he is free of his guilt. And so when God cries out, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Isaiah feels empowered to answer, "I'm here, send me." We know that this sending was all about Isaiah becoming a prophet. Prophets are God's truth tellers. They speak God's truth, the alternative reality of living in the light of God's compassion and justice. And a lot of prophets didn't get authorized by any committee to become a prophet. They didn't go to seminary, they didn't write an ordination paper, they didn't have to jump through any hoops, they just became prophets. But they needed something to, as a sign of their authorization. And so these call narratives could be that sign. It could be the way that Isaiah showed that he was authorized to be a prophet of God. Some scholars believe that it's Isaiah the author showing that the writing that he did is authorized. All of this tends to make me think about this idea of being called and what it means to be called and what it means especially to be called to be a prophet of God. And who's supposed to be called? And how do they get called? You know, I did go to seminary. I did write an ordination paper. I did meet with all sorts of committees. I did jump through all sorts of hoops so that I could have that reverend in front of my name and occasionally wear a clerical collar when I think I'm going to get arrested or something. I did do all of that, and all of that training was to teach me how to maintain the institution of the church. But the institution of the church has, for a very long time now, been comfortably nestled inside the larger system of domination that governs our world. And so it goes against the call to be a prophet. If you want your church to run smoothly, you shouldn't talk about politics. That's what a lot of older pastors told me. And a lot of churches are very large and very prosperous because they speak in ways that align that group of people with the dominant values of the world. So then, what does it mean to be a prophet? And how does a prophet get called? And who gets called? Well, basically, a prophet can do any number of things, but they're bringing forth God's alternative worldview to the world, a worldview that says that it's important to care for everyone, and we start by caring for those who need the most help. It's a worldview that says that when communities fail to care for those around them, that they're failing to be faithful to God. In that sense, then, I think that it's a calling for everyone. Everyone's called to be a prophet. But not everyone hears the call. You know, I don't think Isaiah was just, you know, wandering around the streets of his town thinking about what he was going to have for dinner when all of a sudden a hand reaches down and grabs him and carries him into the throne room of God. We don't hear the voice of God unless we're listening for it. We don't hear the voice of God unless we place ourselves in places where that voice can be heard. I don't think people are going to hear the voice of God as they hang out with the victors of this social order. I don't think you're going to hear the voice of God in the country club or in the boardroom of a giant corporation. You may hear a conversation about God, but it will be a God that has been twisted to align itself with the dominant values of the culture. The Justice Leadership Program is an experiment in giving people an opportunity to hear the voice of God by giving them an opportunity to serve in the context of doing justice. For 11 months, young adults in the Young Adult Program and older adults in the Jubilee Program have an opportunity to work on justice and live in community and live simply, and participate in the life of a faith community, and study and work towards being able to do the work of justice in an even more proficient manner. We set all this up as an alternative way of people to feel that call, an alternative way for people to enter into the work of prophetic ministry, because the church itself really hasn't set up anything like that. We haven't devised anything like that, because a church that's comfortable inside a system of domination isn't really thinking about how to create people who are going to be experts at changing the way things are. So we're creating opportunities. And the people who get to participate in those opportunities are the people that are looking for it, that are listening for them. This, I believe, is part of the work of the community of faith. And I don't think it's just individuals who hear the call, it's communities as well. And I am truly blessed to be a pastor in this community. Because I don't call myself a prophet, I don't think anybody would feel comfortable if I said, "Hi, Rich Gamble, prophet." But it's true that it is a calling of the church, and it's an important calling. I call myself a pastor. I do work to maintain this little institutional church. But you all give me the freedom to be a prophetic voice as well, and to help figure out how we can be a community that lives as a response to the question of what does a prophetic community look like. It's a blessing to be here. But there's so much more work that needs to be done. There's this calling that's out there that people aren't hearing because they don't know to listen. They're not in the right place. The calling can come in a lot of different ways. It can come in the story that you read. It can come in the experience of working with other people to try to change the world. It can come from your own personal experience of being ostracized or made to feel less than human, and then knowing what that's like for other people. It can come from the news. This week there was a story in the news about a guy by the name of Kenny, who in January was found wrapped in garbage bags on the back of a church just a few blocks from here. His frostbite was so bad that when they took him to the hospital, they had to remove his fingertips and cut off his feet. Living in a world where people are treated as garbage can be a call to transform that world. That call is for each and every one of us. And we'll hear it if we put ourselves in the place to hear. That calling is a call of engagement, of struggle, of sacrifice. It is a call that will not come with a secure middle-class occupation. It is a call that challenges us to find space in our lives and space in our calendars and in our budgets to live this life. It is a calling that can transform us. It is a calling that brings us purpose and meaning. It is a calling that transforms us into being God's good news.